eat.
Oh, so good.
Drink. Talk. Rick Redding and Steve Coombs serve up savory conversations about Louisville's world-famous restaurant food and drink scene. The wine is uncorked, the bourbon neat, the apps are on the table. Here comes the main course.
Welcome to Eat, Drink, Talk, where restaurant and bar fans tune in every week to learn about Louisville's amazing eating and drinking scene. I'm Steve Coombs, and joining me in the studio, as always, is my co-host, partner in crime, and unpaid editor, Rick Redding. Happy holidays, Rick.
Man, how are we going to get that unpaid thing taken off there? That would be great.
I don't know. You do a good job. I don't know how to, you know, remove that.
It's a lot of fun though doing the show. It's been something. We started in May and here it is, the end of the year. We're still going each and every week. 33 shows after this in the can. So
it's doing all right.
Pretty good. Pretty good
for
us.
Too. Yeah.
And all those listeners out there, and we are hearing from some of you. And welcome any comments anybody has about the show or. Suggestions for guests, anything like that.
Or suggestions for sponsors. We like there those, you too. Go. Such as those Harvest. And we definitely want to thank them. Located at 624 East Market in Nulu. We definitely want you to check out the three-course Thursday meal. $30 from ingredients that are all local Harvest stuff, things that Patrick Roney and his crew have pickled and canned and put up for the winter months. Mm-hmm. Visit them at dinner from 5 to 10 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday and Friday through Sunday, 10 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. for brunch. Call 502-384-9090 for reservations. Harvest.
What a great place. It really is. Our other sponsor we want to mention is our great friends at Eye Care Institute down on Story Avenue. Always want to mention Mark Prussian and his wonderful company. Great service, great care. I just picked up my new contacts there last week, and it's just an outstanding place. And the technology expertise in issues like LASIK or other serious eye issues, they can take care of that. They're the best in town.
That's what I thought you were holding out for Christmas was LASIK.
It's not off the list yet. I've asked Santa, and
it's an absurd request, Rick.
He said, how about a pair of socks instead?
Complaining you're going to get some coal.
No, I fully expect nice things, but not LASIK. Well, you know, maybe Santa's listening to the show.
Santa, come on, tune in, buddy. Speaking of love of coal, as we had touched on last week in the podcast, was the closure of Germantown Craft House. That was actually news that was breaking as we recorded it.
Exactly.
This story got more reads, maybe I think, than any other story we've ever run, which really shows that we don't always know what really triggers people's emotions. And the social media reaction was just amazing. People either really liked this place or they didn't like it at all. And bottom line is the owners just said, we were cannibalizing our sister concept, Crescent Hill Craft House, and that they didn't execute well in Germantown. So,
well, I understand they're going to try it again under a new name, Devil's Do. Right, and
that's right.
That's gonna maybe this time it'll work.
So barbecue, maybe a little, some noodle bowls. It sounds interesting. It's kind of a fusion of several things. The menu isn't clear yet, but if you go to their Facebook page, you can see the photos posted by their consultant chef Howard Richardson. So lots going on there. So we hope it works out. Beautiful space, that's for sure.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have something thrive in that wonderful building that they have right now.
Oh yeah, it's gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. So, Rick, I got to go to the Maker's Mark Whiskey Cellar last Thursday in Loretto.
That's pretty awesome. We were talking about the story, and you know, I went on a tour, just a regular touristy tour in the summertime, and I saw this side of the hill and said,
with a big hole in it.
Yes, what the heck's going on over there?
Well, they dynamited it three times to make a big cavern in which to cold age its Maker's Mark 46 whiskey. That way there's no angel share because you don't get the heat from being in a rick house. And but the interesting fact, I love this, is it took about 40 years for the Maker's Mark base brand to get to the point to where it sold 100,000 cases a month. Maker's 46 did it in 6 years.
Wow.
So granted, that's standing on the shoulders of a giant, but still it shows the demand for that kind of product. So, you know,
let me ask you this. This struck me as this is an innovation, I guess, for Maker's Mark. I've never heard anything about like this in the whiskey business. I mean, are there are other brands going to copy this? Is this a unique thing?
You know, it's unique so far. Now, will others copy it? It's certainly not so scientific that they couldn't.
Is it worth it, I guess, to go through all
this? It's labor intense for sure. But they can command the price. Maker's Mark can get whatever it asks for. So it's called secondary maturation, meaning that either you pour what was matured in one barrel into another, or you take those same barrels and you add new staves to them just to add, you know, kind of bump up the flavor. So mm-hmm. like a Kentucky Owl does that. Obviously, Angel's Envy does that by pouring its whiskey into port barrels. So technically speaking, it's nothing all that new, but it is innovative in that makers, you know, really can't control the flavor in terms of keeping it in that cold area. You know, where there's sure. There's no whiskey loss. It's cool.
Well, it sounds cool. Moving on, another story we just got about this Wild Ginger restaurant. My favorite sushi restaurant in town is opening another location.
Norton Commons. That's got to be good news for them, not only because it's a second unit, but that's not cheap real estate. So I wouldn't think they went there or are going to go there, I should say, unwisely.
Yeah, so it's good. A great sushi option for Norton Commons.
Yeah, and really for the city. I mean, that's the one place where they really break all the rules of traditional sushi with, you know, really wide variety of sauces and presentations, and it's very eye-appealing. The only time we had it a couple weeks ago, and I thought it was really good. I've been there lots, but sometimes the blessing is also the curse, Rick, and they get too far away from the traditions for me. If you have to cram a piece of sushi into your mouth with your chopsticks, that's going too far. Yeah, let's get it back to small bites like is traditional.
Well, they're not going to be bigger mouths, so we have to go smaller sushi.
We'd have to go to Washington to find bigger mouths for sure.
All right, and you know, I'm so jealous. You got all these great things to do. How was the Harvest Chef's
table? It was incredible. So it's mm-hmm. table for 12 in the kitchen at Harvest. The whole meal was prepared back there, obviously, and served by the kitchen staff. And some of the elements of or some of the courses were done right there in front of us. It just depended on what kind of equipment they needed. It is very cool. I love communal tables. I love being forced to meet new people and to hear their reactions to these meals and to have no control over it. You got what you got. And it was fantastic. I mean, Patrick Roney is his name doesn't always pop up among diners as one of the great chefs in this city, but he truly is. And that's not because they're our sponsor at all. He's just super, super talented and knows how to bridge that gap between old world skills and tradition and modern tastes. And sure. it was amazing.
Well, that's a great treat. I mean, some folks are kind of intimidated by going in and not be able to select what they want on a menu, but just to walk in and know that the chef's making that decision for you, it's pretty cool.
I love that. And that the front of the house manager is doing all the pairings for you. I mean, it's turnkey. You just hand over that card. Let the transaction happen, and the rest is up to them.
There you go. So you also had a nice night out with my Bourbon Brothers.
That was fun. Now, you've done that before, the Bourbon Brotherhood.
I know Bruce pretty well, and he's a great guy.
It was just fun to be with all those people just jawing about whiskey. And that night was the You Don't Know Jack meeting. It was all about Jack Daniel's Special Select, you know, barrel bottles, and those are great. I was really impressed with them. The rye was actually quite good too, but the one that was supposedly the highlight of the evening was the Sinatra edition.
Yeah,
it was off key, you know, to just say so. That uh-huh. did not do much for me. I know that was the easy pun.
Well, it's easy to market the Sinatra. I mean, I didn't know when I read about that stuff. I didn't know that was Frank's drink,
but it was cool. I mean, these things are neat people. You ought to check them out. I think it's like $10 to go and just to meet people who share that love of whiskey and hang around. It's not all guys. There was a handful of ladies there too. So, Rick, talk a little bit about this Insider Louisville story we saw today about Third Term Brewing opening in Crestwood.
Well, it's great. I mean, it's great news. It's surprising news. You know, the original in J-Town is like a quarter mile from me. It's stumbling distance from my house.
So that means it's a half mile yeah, at that exactly. point.
But it's four guys, and I mean, they're entrepreneurs, and they have a great love of beer. And I've had them on both of my other podcasts in the past, and they really study the beer, and I'm shocked. I'm happily shocked that they're expanding.
Yeah, and to Oldham County, which desperately needs it. There's not a single good bar out there. And to go right to a craft brewery, that's fantastic. Good for them. I mean, I leave the place, and a year later, look what's happening. You know, it goes wet, and breweries popping up. Now they just need a good cocktail bar out there.
Get your helicopter and going back on out
there. Yeah, heaven knows the money's there for it. So
Third Turn, and it's pretty cool. Of course, everybody knows that their name, where their name come from. You know that, right, Steve?
No, I don't know the story behind that. Okay. Do tell.
Well, it relates to the Derby. They're partiers, and Third Turn is traditionally, back in the good old days when the infield was wild, the Third Turn was the wildest place to be.
And now it's full of corporate suites, right?
That's right.
My guess is.
There's too much concrete over there. That's a whole other story.
And speaking of wild people, talk about Reed Johnson, your guest this
week. Yeah, I look forward to having you listen to the Reed Johnson interview. He's an energetic, fun guy. He's from Madisonville, Kentucky, and a couple of interesting things you'll hear in the interview. First of all, his career choices, he says, were coal mine, seatbelt factory, or food.
In Madisonville?
Yeah.
That was
his list of career choices. So he came to Louisville back in 2002. He's been a lot of different places around town.
Yes, he has.
Loves it out there at the Red Barn Kitchen and is, well, if you're listening to this on Wednesday morning, he is getting started on this 300-pound pig.
That's a big hog to smoke.
That's a huge hog.
Usually they're about, 180.
Yeah, he said 150, 200. He said this was, he's going to stay up with it all night, 24 hours, and that on Thursday they have this great big event that, we might want to go to. It's $15 all you can eat from this hog, and they're just going to open up the doors.
As we discussed, that could be the Eat, Drink, Talk staff party, all three of us.
I think so. We might even invite some guests or something.
All right, let's bring Reed in.
Okay, Steve and I will be back with our favorites of the week and our next guest. And it is Christmas week on Eat, Drink, Talk, and today I'm at the Red Barn Kitchen with Chef Reed Johnson. How are you, Reed?
Doing just fine. Thanks for having me.
Man, it smells so good in here. There's Christmas music playing. It's a great time of year for restaurants, isn't it?
It definitely is. It's time to be around family and friends and just embrace around the table. We always try to showcase that and just kind of bring the families in and enjoy the holiday.
Well, I just saw a post you put on Facebook of a big old pig. Tell me about the plans for that.
Yeah, that was kind of spur of the moment. Chef and owner, Fernando Martinez, brought in a hog from one of his friend's family farms, and we're going to throw a hog roast next week. Just kind of a spontaneous on-the-spot kind of thing. I thought we'd have a holiday party up here, and we got about a 300-pound pig. I brought my old old-fashioned stick burner trailer in. We're going to fire it up outside.
I saw it out front, yeah.
Should be a lot of fun. We've done a lot of 150, 200-pound hogs, maybe not one quite this big, but we're going to stuff it full on Wednesday and cook overnight and hopefully have a feast about 4 o'clock on Thursday.
Wow, so, that's got to feed a lot of people.
A lot of people, yeah. There's a lot of bone and stuff in there, too, but a 300-pound hog, you'll probably get 150 pounds of meat, if not a little bit more, so we'll be able to accommodate at least 200, 250 people off of it.
Well, that'll be a big party out here in Linden. I know that people take great pride in their preparation of barbecue. What makes it so special? What are some of your techniques?
For me, it just goes back to like childhood. Grew up with my uncle having a huge pit. My dad was always smoking outside. So I'm just kind of doing the food that I grew up with. Now I'm from Western Kentucky, so I grew up around Owensboro and barbecue culture. And for me, it's all about burning good hardwood. I burn a lot of wild cherry and hickory. Those are two of my favorites. It's also just what I grew up on. There's a lot of other stuff out there. I like the fruity tones from the cherry. I like the deep smoke from the hickory. It's really about just love for the food. Low and slow. We don't ever rush anything. It's done when it's done, and we run out when we run out, and we try to keep everything fresh.
Okay. So if somebody wants to come out to this thing on next week, it's on the 22nd, right?
On Thursday.
Is it just a regular thing? You just come in and enjoy the barbecue?
Yeah, you can RSVP, through the Facebook post. But we really don't take reservations here. We like to just take care of our patron customers, so it's kind of first come, first serve. At 4 o'clock, tentatively 4 o'clock, if it's done, that's when we'll bring the pig in, and it'll be all you can eat until we run out. Got some good beer specials on, too.
Wow. So, cost for that? I mean, it's an all-you-can-eat thing, right?
Uh-huh.
So.
$15 a head, which, covers your seat and all the meat you can cram down your throat, and then... you want some sides to go with it, we'll have plenty ready, and you know, all the beverage as well will be available. We've got some good specials going.
Sounds like the place to be next week, as nobody really wants to cook except the pros during Christmas week. Let me ask you about this place. I came to the opening back, I guess it was last summer. Everything gone as well as expected, or how are we doing here at the Red Barn?
It's been going great. Business is going great. With any opening, you have a few stumbles along the way. Really big renovation here. It used to be Joe's Older Than Dirt and been here almost 100 years. A few heating and cooling issues, things like that with the building. But as far as you know, customer base and stuff, we've been pretty successful, pretty happy with everything.
I understand the kitchen is immaculate. It's the best equipment.
Yeah, Chef Fernando definitely put me in a good spot. You know, I had a lot of faith behind my skill set and wanted me to have a good laboratory to work out of. So when we opened up, we completely gutted it. It's all Vulcan equipment. I've got two giant Southern Pride smokers back there. I could do probably 600-700 pounds a day if I need to.
Wow.
Yeah, it's absolutely beautiful workspace. We tried to leave the dining area more rustic, but the kitchen is all up to date with the right equipment.
Well, we all, you know, and people that drive by, they miss the moose out front, right? Yeah, I'm sure you hear a lot of comments about that. Let me ask you about yourself and your background. You came here for this restaurant, but you've done a lot of different stops here in Louisville.
Yeah, I've been in Louisville since 2002. I moved up here for culinary school and ended up just kind of sticking around. Louisville's treated me really well. Been here going on about, I guess, almost 15 years now. Did fine dining for a while, worked for Proof on Main for a lot of years and really loved that. Had a smokehouse operation fall in my lap, opened up against the grain with those guys for a couple of years, wanted to get back into fine dining and joined Susan Hirschberg at Wiltshire for a couple of years in the catering department. And then Fernando approached me and asked me if I wanted to get back into, you know, more of what I love to do, and that's why I'm here.
Yeah, well, obviously it's been successful. I just hear people raving about the food here, and it's different than, a lot different in terms of what is served here than it was when it was Joe's.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks different, and the kitchen's equipment's better and the chef's better, so it's all greater. The crowds you've had here, are they what you expected?
Yeah, we wanted to turn it a little bit away from like a dollar beer bar, more into a family dining experience. And it took a little while for the neighborhood to embrace it, I feel like. A lot of the old Joe's regulars maybe were a little hesitant on coming back. Once we've gotten them in here, we've still got the big screen TVs. We've still got cheap domestics along with great craft beer selection, 25 taps. As they've come back in, I think they've fallen back in love with it. So now we've got the families in the neighborhood coming in along with the old regulars around the bar.
Well, you've got quite a reputation as a chef around town. I mean, you say you grew up in Western Kentucky. Was there anything else that you were going to be other than a chef?
You know, where I grew up at, it was all coal mine country. My options were coal mine, seatbelt factory, or restaurants. As a teenager, I started working in restaurants. I grew up with my grandmother living next to me, and you know, I was either cooking with mom or cooking with my grandmother, and I've never had a job outside of the industry.
Wow.
I don't even know if I'd be good at anything else. I've been doing it so long.
Well, it seems like fun, and it certainly takes its toll on your personal life and all that. But you've certainly embraced it. And we've got a I know by the time this airs, it'll all be over. But we've got this big party to go to Saturday night, right?
Yeah, Caroline. Right, right.
She's a regular on the show. Are you contributing something for that, right?
Yeah, hopefully so. Probably so. We'll try to do something with probably the house cured bacon that we do here. I've known Caroline for a long time, and Michael Beckman probably as long as I've been in Louisville, and they always invite me out. I've been their non-celebrity chef judge a few times at their bacon bash. It's always a good time out there. They're great people.
Okay. And just to wrap it up here on Eat Drink Talk, this big bash on, I want to repeat the date. It's December 20th. It's Wednesday, right?
Thursday.
It's Thursday. And you expect to use up that whole hog?
I would love to. We'll see what happens. I feel like, you know, around the holiday time, a lot of people are traveling. And it may just be family and friends and us all stuffing our faces. And it also, you know, might be a packed house with a line at the door. I guess we'll see what happens.
How long does it take something like that to cook?
A while. The smaller pigs I've done in the past, usually, you know, 14, 16 hours, something like that. I'm expecting this one to take about 20.
Okay.
You know, we'll see. There's no real equation to it. Depends on how cold it is outside. That smoker's not thermostat driven, and I don't have any other way to speed things along. So if it's cold outside, the smoker will run a little cold. If it's a little warmer, to get done a little quicker.
So how much active while it's cooking? What do you do to it?
There's a lot going on cooking a whole hog. If you don't have, like I say, if you don't have anything with a gas pilot or something that contributes heat, I normally don't sleep much while I do them. I stay up all night with it. Not always working on the pit because you do got to leave the door shut for the thing to cook. But about every 2 hours, you know, I'll have to go outside and make sure my coal base is right and my smoke's right. Every, you know, maybe 3 or 4 hours, we'll rotate it. Mine's offset smoker, but it runs a full back of the box. So we got to rotate it every 3 or 4 hours to make sure we're getting an even cook on it. You know, so I'll probably just stay at Red Barn the night before. We'll kick on the TVs, maybe drink a couple beers while we wait and sleep in the booths, and then welcome everybody on in Thursday for a hog roast.
Wow, I didn't realize that it took that much. So while you're checking it and all that, is it how do you? I mean, do you season it?
I do. You know, when we pull them out, we'll salt brine that thing for a couple of days if we can find something big enough to give it a bath in, and then I rub it down. My pork rub is, you know, it's my own recipe, a little sweet, little heat. I usually baste them with a vinegar-based barbecue sauce. You know, you just kind of make love to the product. That's what makes it good. It takes a little bit of, you know, a little bit of skill and, you know, a little bit of love. And, you know, they seem to come out pretty well. They're beautiful when they come out.
So you can see the picture. If you check out Reed's Facebook page, you can see the picture of this big old hog that's going to be cooked at. And when's he going in the smoker?
It'll go in Wednesday morning, probably about 9 a.m., and we'll shoot for it being done around 9 on Thursday morning, and then we'll just hold it warm until it's time for dinner. That'll give us a couple hours just in case it's not quite there to speed the process along a little bit.
Okay. Well, it sounds like a blast. I got to come out and give it a shot. And, Reed, thanks for taking a few minutes to talk with us.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having us.
Excuse me, garçon. I'll have another.
And that was fun hanging out with Reed Johnson over there at Red Barn. I hope to see you over there on Thursday.
High energy guy.
Yeah. What a great holiday thing to have a big pig roast right before the big day on Sunday. So, Steve, this is part of the show. We love it. It's where we get to talk about our favorite things that we had to eat and drink this week.
So of course, Mom came from Harvest Chef's Table dinner last Thursday. And again, like I was talking about Patrick Roney's ability to touch on the classic and the modern. He did a rabbit rillette, which is basically a force meat. And it was just awesome. A rillette is an old French preparation. And if you can imagine, just kind of, you know, the little bits, anything that you would take off the bone, you know, things that people normally, you know, throw away, they kind of puree it, but they fine chop it and they press it together. And it's a kind of little cake. It's heavily seasoned. Ooh. It's fantastic. And the rabbit sausage, which was tossed in with the gnocchi dish. So rabbit sausage, you could have put that on a pizza and people wouldn't have noticed. They thought, man, this tastes a whole lot more delicate than pork. But again, just his imagination and inspiration is fantastic.
I'm getting kind of, I got a quick coming in here during before lunch, you know, listening to you talk about that make me kind of hungry. But is this dish like something you can order over there? Is it just special?
No, that was a one-off, I would imagine. You know, now that some that they'll have, if they're putting that much rabbit on a special menu, they're running it somewhere else in the house. So
okay,
yeah, but the sausage and the rillette both take quite a bit of time to make. So
sounds good. Well, I went sweet, sort of sweet, I guess. I got invited. I know you've been to this party before, Caroline Canops.
I never have made it.
Oh, you never made it. She lives on Macon, and it's a bacon-themed party. A lot of people bring dishes that are bacon-themed. There were a lot of things I could have mentioned here, but the oddity of bacon with chocolate and whiskey and coffee all melded into a candy. It's candy, and it was sort of like a peanut brittle sort of texture to it.
Oh, awesome. So it was crunchy?
Yeah, it was crunchy.
Oh, well, bacon brittle, I've heard it before, too. So, oh, yeah. That sounds fantastic.
So it was a pretty awesome thing, but there were a lot of other things there to eat and
sweet,
drink.
Sweet, salty, smoky, chocolatey.
Yeah.
There's just no all way. That. There's no way to go wrong.
All
there.
That, and they insisted you have it with
chocolate the ballot.
Whiskey. Yeah, oh, yeah. Ballot,
and so. who was the marvelous cook who produced that? Did you know
that was
meet that
the
person?
Famous Michael Beckman.
That's the co-host of the party.
Yeah, exactly. Co-host of the party. He was in fine form playing games downstairs. What's that called? Right
left, control? Right, center.
Left, right, center, yeah.
That's right. Don't play Leslie and Steve Coombs. We get lucky.
It cost us, I think, $6 that we contributed.
I've lost before, but I've won a bunch in that game, too.
It's not a game of skill, so I'm not
no,
giving
it
you,
is not.
Not giving you any credit for... being smart or something, you know. Okay, you got
but
lucky.
I was but I'll, you have to if I had winnings from LCR, I would encourage and buy people Blackberry Farms Classic Saison Ale. That was one of the pours in the chef's dinner the other night, and you can get it at the Louisville Beer Store. I looked it up today online. It was $13.99. it's a bomber, which is a 22 ounce bottle. If you like saisons, it's just fantastic, big yeasty full-bodied beer. I wish I knew a little bit more about the style, but it's got a little tang to it. I mean, it saison, I guess, celebrates the ability to brew beer being warm enough in France, once the spring comes on. Of course, now, since we control everything with refrigeration, you can have saison anytime. But it was delicious. Definitely worth the buy.
Awesome. Well, sounds great. Sounds great. We've had a lot of great food and drink that we've mentioned in this show. I guess, we could mention that next week we're going to have something special. We don't have any details worked out yet, but we're going to talk about all the things that have happened in 2016.
Openings and closing would take us the special edition 3-hour show. I mean, golly. So we'll have to pick the
we'll
highlights,
pick and choose.
I guess. Highlights and lowlights, and limit it to 5 in each because there's so much that goes on here.
There you go. See, there's a rule. We have a rule for next week now.
Well, and one of the highlights, of course, is Harvest, one of our sponsors. And they, again, open for dinner Tuesday through Saturday, 5 to 10. Brunch, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 10 a.m. to 2:30. Call 384-9090 for reservations. Definitely tell those people hello down there, like Patrick Roney, the people we've talked about. They love to come out and talk to the guests. And who knows, maybe they have some rabbit rillette and rabbit sausage lying around for you, Rick Redding.
Yeah, well, Patrick did come out when I went down there and had dinner, had a nice conversation. The service there is great. Can't say enough about it. And speaking of service, let's transition into our Eye Care Institute sponsorship.
Did Patrick say, my, what nice contacts you have? I'm like, this must be Eye Care Institute.
He said, can't you see the menu? What's
go to Eye Care Institute and get some contacts, for crying out loud. Redding?
those guys are very nice. Call them at 502-589-1500 to get an appointment, get your eyes checked. During the holidays, it's a great time to do that because maybe you have a little bit of time off work or whatever for those of you that...
That would be a good time to do it.
Good time to do it. Well, I'm excited to hear from your guest, Steve, who is, becoming nationally famous.
Annie Petrie, the executive chef and partner at DECA, was recently a competitor on Bravo's Top Chef show. Now, all the episodes have not run, and therefore we can't even ask her any secrets, much less spill any. But she is a real driving force in the Louisville culinary community, and kind of like Patrick, you don't necessarily hear all about her because she's a quiet soul and lets her food speak for herself. But she's a cool lady, newlywed, and what she's doing down at DECA is fantastic. I guess they're in their fourth year, maybe. To have that kind of a reputation, to be able to stay that long at a place and just still wow customers is great. So we're going to let her do the talking here in just a minute. But in the meantime, start making reservations.
Yeah, I love that. I love going there just for the cellar bar down there.
Isn't it great?
It's just a cool room. One of the coolest rooms in the city. And
and that outdoor patio with the fountain, and there's the second floor deck. I mean, the money that they put into that facility to open it up is just... it's amazing.
It's awesome. I remember when it opened, and it's got some staying power. So good for them. So we'll let you go. We'll move on to the interview, and remember to tell your friends about Eat, Drink, Talk, and come back with us next week for our special year-end edition of the Eat, Drink, Talk podcast.
Dessert? Yes, please.
My guest this week is Annie Petrie, executive chef and partner at DECA. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Now we're just going to get you relaxed because we know this is not your favorite thing. See, she's already laughing. We'll get Andy out of her. That's your shell. You don't have a shell that you live in. But obviously, you had to get out of your shell to get on Top Chef, mm-hmm. right? And that's a little bit of what we're going to talk about. Not going to talk about because this hasn't aired yet. So we're going to tiptoe around the issue, but we still want to see how you experienced it and how you got on the show. How does one get on a show like that?
Well, I'm not 100% sure how everyone gets on the show, but for me, I was approached by casting agencies for a few years in a row. And there's tons of interviews that you do, and it took me a while to kind of like warm up to the idea and uh-huh. decide to do it.
What was the final straw that made you think, yeah, I'll go ahead and do this, because I know it's outside of your comfort zone?
Well, it kept being presented to me, and I was like, maybe there's something here that I need to do to learn, or some way that I can stretch myself and challenge myself.
Grow a little bit?
Grow a little, yes.
So once you finally... Oh, let me ask you this. Were you secretly hoping that you'd get rejected? And they said, oh, no, we don't want you.
I was trying to reserve judgment. I was really nervous and scared from the get-go. So, I don't know. I was a little bit of both.
Now, why are you averse to that? Because I know you do kind of like to let your cooking speak for yourself. But why was it just the idea of television or just... And being in front of a lot of people.
I have stage fright. Even right now, I'm nervous. It's just one of those things that I'm going to learn to live with. For a while, I thought it was something I had to conquer. But now I think I just need to, like, figure out how to kind of calm myself and work with it. Because maybe it's just who I am. But I knew that being under that intense pressure with the cameras and the judges and everything, that it was going to be extra difficult for me to battle my my nerves. So that's pretty much what did it for me. I was like, I just need to get out there and do it and see what I can.
So let's talk about the experience without revealing any of the details of the show. What was that like? Was it just really intimidating to be in that setting?
Yeah, there's nothing like it. I mean, on a daily basis, I deal with a lot of stress, and it's... I feel feel comfortable doing it in my job. However, when you add judges and cameras and a lot of people that you're competing against that are also great chefs, it just kind of escalates it and makes it even scarier.
What was it intimidating at all to be around? How do you term yourselves? The other competitors, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were all competitors, rookies versus veterans is how it started out.
And you can't reveal those details either, right?
I mean, a little bit. Yeah, whatever. There's been three episodes now, so I can talk about what's happened in those three episodes. It was difficult in the beginning going up against the veterans because they know how to play the game already.
Are they veterans of the show or veterans in the industry or
veterans
both?
Of the show. Uh-huh. I'd say that most of the contestants are veterans in the industry. Mm-hmm. However, as far as the show was concerned, I was a rookie because I had never competed on TV before. And then there were the veterans had been on the show at least once and sometimes twice. So they knew kind of how to play the game, how to really work in the kitchen environment. On the show to know how to deal with the judges and the cameras and all living in a house on top of each other. So they had a leg up on that for sure.
So when you're doing your thing in the studio, it's your thing. There is no team element to it, is there?
Oh, there are. It's it just depends on the show. Like the first show, it was rookies versus veterans. But as the show goes on, there's different team environments throughout the show.
Did that create some camaraderie that you enjoy in a professional kitchen?
Yes, definitely. I mean, there was healthy competition, but for the most part, everyone was really welcoming, and I feel like I walked away with a lot of really great friends.
So it wasn't terribly unusual or foreign to you to have people who were kind of on your side?
No, that was one of the only comforting things, was to know that I was in it with like-minded people.
What would be discomforting about it? Just standing in front of the judges, or
oh, the cameras and the judges. I think the biggest battle for me was myself and my nerves. So they were just so escalated by the whole experience, and definitely the judges are very intimidating, particularly Tom Colicchio.
Partly because he's the real deal,
his
personality out there too?
His personality is, you know, he comes across on the show as like stern, but I know he has a light and fun side too. But it was just nerve-wracking because he knows what he's talking about. And so that to me was probably one of the most intimidating things.
Are they ever observing you in the kitchen, or is it you create your dish and you take it out to them, and that's when they see it?
There are cameras at every moment, pretty much.
But do the judges have a look at that?
Yes. They're watching you cook.
It is very much Big Brother in that
sense.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Someone is always watching.
It's what's harder, standing in front of those guys or a disappointed customer?
Oh, man. Well, I definitely wouldn't want to disappoint a customer. I feel like in the restaurant, it's not a game. It's real life. So I want to make sure that my guests at the restaurant are happy at all times. However, when you go out to a table and you talk to a guest, even if there's something that's wrong, you have every chance to turn it around and make them have a great experience and want to come back. So that's a difference there for sure.
So if Calico was the toughest, who might have been either an ally or a softy, as it were?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't discover any softies when I was there.
Who were the other judges, by the way?
It's Padma and Gail Simmons, yep. And Richard Blaze was one of the...
I'm going to meet him at a conference next month. Absolutely will. What will this... For being on Top Chef, what will this do for your career and maybe even your confidence?
Wow, I'm not sure. I don't know if I've walked away feeling more confident about my skills on TV, but I do feel like I stepped up to the challenge and I faced my fears. So that in itself makes me feel a little bit more confident. I already was pretty confident in what I do. I mean, I love, this is what I'm passionate about, is food and cooking in restaurants. So I feel like that solidified even more because I come out of the other end knowing I still love it. Let's see.
What part of that would play out in your work here at DECA? Any takeaways that you think will really make it more fun to work here, more inspiring, or what maybe you would even share with your colleagues?
I would say that I appreciate even more the having my own space and a kitchen that I've curated and a team that I've curated that already, you know, we already respect each other.
House.
Yeah, and you don't have to work so hard to gain respect because you're working together every day and continually growing as a team. So I think I just appreciate that even more.
How long were you gone from the kitchen to do the show?
6 weeks.
Six, beginning to end, no coming back, no...
I didn't come back because I was, quote-unquote, in Spain. So so I was gone for a solid chunk of time.
Did you have, quote-unquote, communication with your staff?
Not much. So very limited.
Who stepped up in your absence?
Well, I've got an amazing team, and they were totally fine. They're rock stars. So I'm lucky to have that.
What month did this happen in?
It was in May. June.
So past Derby is a little bit slow, maybe that helped out?
It was right after Derby. I mean, it was literally like Oaks. I got engaged to my now husband, and then that Monday I went away for the show. So I had a rockin' crazy Derby weekend here at the restaurant.
No break.
And then I left, yeah.
And so that was worse than Derby?
It was definitely a lot harder than Derby. I'd say it was a marathon for sure.
Explain what the days are like. I mean, is it every day or do you have a day off at all?
It's every day is different. There was the days were full, I'll say that, but they were every day was different.
Is there anything like a special dish or special menu that you might want to recreate here once the show is fully revealed?
I probably am going to put a tomato tart on the menu when tomato season comes around because of the show, just to let people try it and know how good it actually is.
So we got to wait until July after this?
Yeah,
really? Come
we
on,
do.
Annie.
Unfortunately, it's not tomato season right now, but as far as maybe I'll think of something else by sooner than that.
All right, last question. If you could relive any part of that experience, what would it be? What was the most fun?
Oh, my goodness. I think just being around all the other chefs and you have a lot of responsibility because you're on the show, but you're away from your life. So you're kind of a little bit free in that way. So just having all those friends around to hang out with, all like-minded people, I guess.
Any leisure time at all? No chance to escape and go get a beer with your buddies?
Not really.
So this is fun, huh?
Yeah. It's fun. We hung out a lot in the back rooms while we're waiting and stuff. So we got to hang out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, welcome back. And it's a busy season here, so I'm sure you got to get back to work. But thanks for making some time for us on Eat Drink Talk today, Annie.
Thanks for having me.
If you just can't get enough, catch up on the news of the city's restaurant scene every single day by visiting www.eatdrinktalk.net. Steve and Rick share all the latest local scoop from Louisville's restaurants and bars. You can also find old episodes of the show and connect with the guys on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Eat well, my friends. Another episode next week.